Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
State Senator Whitney Westerfeld joining us now on the Disruption Zone. I've been wanting to talk to him about his awesome weight loss journey, which is so apparent when you see him on the Senate floor. He looks healthy, he looks vigorous, he looks trim and fit. It's pretty cool stuff, and we're going to talk to him about that in just a few minutes. But first, obviously, the big thing facing the Commonwealth of Kentucky, our nation, and really our globe, is the outbreak of coronavirus, COVID-19, as it's sometimes referred, or as the media seems to be arguing over whether or not to call it the Chinese Wuhan virus. The Wuhan virus seems like the right word for me because we've always named viruses from geographical reasons, like the West Nile virus and others. Wuhan is the province. But now it's just become a little political football that one side pokes at the other with, and it's silly and it wastes energy. But anyway, that's what's consuming America and our state. Whitney Westerfeld, thanks for coming on the program. How are you?
I'm great, Leland. Thanks for having me on, man.
Let's start with the state's response to the coronavirus. I think most people believe that Governor Beshear has done a pretty decent job keeping the state calm and making decisions. I think there's only one or two things he's done that I disagree with, but I do want to say that I believe he's done them with the right heart. I think he's trying to make the best decision. There's an enormous amount weighing on him and yourself and others in Frankfort. How do you feel about the state's response so far?
I think the administration's response has been generally good. I think making sure the flow of information is clear and routine and regular is good. I think that's good on all levels of government. So I appreciate that we've had subject matter experts talking about what things are going on, what's happening, where we are. It's nice to have a regular update just about how many cases and where the cases are. And I'm sure everyone else is inquiring about that too. And so they're trying to figure out all the information they can and pass that along to us. And I think that's a good thing.
Right. I think the only thing that I would take issue with, and I'm not saying this because I want to be in any way political in these times, I just think it's important that we start to think forward now, because I'm concerned about small businesses, specifically restaurants, salons that we're told to shut down, things like that, that they have I'm concerned about their survivability rate. And while I'm on board with the idea that we all need to hunker down for, you know, 2, maybe 3 weeks, after that, we need a plan forward. We need to start thinking about how do we reintegrate with our economy. Perhaps we look at a model where, you know, elderly people and people with immune compromise situations are asked to please politely stay at home, not because we're afraid they'll spread it, but because we're afraid they'll get it. And then we've seen that the research is showing us that younger, healthier people tend to not really be affected much by this. We let them go back into work as long as they're not experiencing any symptoms.
It's funny you mention that, because there's actually a trending Twitter thread or bit right now by Bloomberg indicating that young adults may be not as impervious to the coronavirus as was once thought.
Right.
I think you're right. I think there are people who have differing opinions. I think I think shutting down and flattening the curve, I think, is all good, generally speaking. But my goodness, the economic damage from this,
right,
it is catastrophic.
Yeah,
and will continue to be.
Well, the fear that I have is if we don't have
close their doors, it's tough to recover from that.
Right, and this is what I'm thinking about long term. I don't hear any of our leaders right now talking about what's the plan in 3 weeks and giving us sort of a concrete, here are some benchmarks for how we could get back to work in 3 weeks. If these things happen, then we can do this, this, and this. And there's no one talking about that strategy. It just seems like right now.
Do they even know the answer to that?
Well, I don't know that they do. But let me finish the point, because I think it's important. There has to be some sort of structure to it that says this is the plan going forward and how we get out of it. Because the longer this uncertainty, here's my fear, Senator Westerfeld. If we continue much longer than 3 or 4 weeks here, the economic devastation to this is going to kill far more people than this virus ever could dream of.
It's going to do a lot of damage. And I mean, we're talking about it right now in the legislature in terms of the budget.
Right.
Most people won't ever see it and won't ever know it until the service that they need from state government in this form or that isn't there, or is delayed, or is dysfunctional or ineffective because we haven't been able to put as much money because we didn't have as much money to spend. That's just from a public policy and legislative and budgeting standpoint. But there are also those real impacts of local business, small businesses, and large businesses alike. But some are obviously much more well-insulated for this sort of thing than others. But this is uncharted territory for everybody.
Right.
At least everybody here.
Right.
And so I don't know what that looks like, but I think you're right. I think it's absolutely appropriate to have a game plan in place. I don't know what those benchmarks would be.
Right.
You know, do we need to see a decline in the number of cases by X percent, or is a decline at all a good sign versus an increase?
Well, I think the first benchmark is testing. Once we can get as many tests as we need, then we can get a realist. Because right now, here's the thing people are going to see over the next few days and week or so. You're going to see numbers of infections go exponentially up, and everybody's going to think the sky is falling. And to some extent, it may be. But the real culprit behind that may be the fact that we're actually finally able to test. And when we can test, then we can get our hands around just how big this is. Once we know how big it is and we're able to test whenever we need to, then we can accurately measure whether or not a slowdown in the number of cases is actually a slowdown in the virus. And I think that's when we can say this benchmark means this. Once the tests are in place, that means this. Once this is in place and we start to see a lowering of the number of infections, now we can start to move forward with a plan like this. I mean, that to me is what I'm talking about when I mention benchmarks.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. It's as good a place as any, and since nobody's been in a place like this before, that's as good a place as any to start.
What's next for the legislature? I mean, I know I saw a story yesterday in the Courier Journal that normally unemployment claims in Kentucky are around, 2,000 or so, maybe in a week. And in the last week, it's been like 17,000. That's an enormous number of unemployment claims. That is going to cost, obviously, corporations. That's going to cost the state as well. How are we dealing with that? What is the plan to deal with that?
It will. All I can say at this point is that the budget committee in both the House and the Senate, when they start their conference committee discussions, that's going to have to be part of the consideration. We're looking at ways not just to increase funding to Cabinet Health and Family Services and other parts and other cabinets that are going to be hit with a lot of this in one department or another, but also what kind of investments we can make into the Budget Reserve Trust Fund, which is the rainy day fund, to make sure when unexpected expenses show up that we have resources there to cover that. There may even be, I have no idea, I'm just speculating, entirely speculating, I have no basis of information on this other than just my brain guessing as a possible option. They may extend what agencies have authority to tap into the Budget Reserve Trust Fund to address this crisis. So, and all of that is based, we're budgeting in the blind. And we're addressing policy questions like what you just talked about in the blind. We have no idea what our revenue impacts are going to be.
Right.
There were a series of tweets. Senator Will Schroeder from Northern Kentucky shared them with a group of us senators a day or two ago. The Cincinnati MSA has the tweets made reference to, you know, $1 billion+ worth of economic engine that's just shut off right now.
Right.
And how much of an impact that's going to be. And that's just Cincinnati's MSA.
Right.
We've got a few of those that touch Kentucky. I'm in Hopkinsville, and we're there with the Clarksville MSA in northwestern Tennessee, and we're close to that. We're affected by that. Everybody is. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, the budget committee sent out a joint letter, or they were going to send out a joint letter they've talked about, requesting new numbers from the consensus forecasting group so we even know where in the world to start.
Right.
If I were those folks, I wouldn't know where to begin.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how bad the damage is, so I don't know what kind of numbers we're working with. But so we're building a plane while it's flying without the print, the blueprint.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, you think about the economic the things that Kentucky's economy is often considered to be built upon: horse racing, bourbon, and you know, and stuff like that. And you right now, horse racing is just basically effectively canceled. You know, the Derby is going to be in September, which fortunately will shift some of that economic impact. But the entire festivals leading up takes, you take, you know, Kentucky's biggest city of Louisville, the whole Kentucky Derby Festival, that's now missing now. It's this big hole in all the economic activity generated by that. The Spring Keeneland meet.
You can go from the big major events like that to fundraisers for local nonprofits that have been scheduled.
Right.
My wife's got one that's the first or second week in May. Well, they haven't canceled it yet, but I'd be surprised if they get to keep it.
Right, yeah.
And that's the biggest fundraiser of the whole year. And if everything gets shifted to September or the fall or summer or fall region, we're all going to be competing for scarce dollars from big events to small events.
Yeah.
It's going to be a mess. And one that I feel confident, I'd be surprised if we weren't going right back into the budget in the 2021 session to try to adjust mid-year based on what the fallout ended up being.
Yeah. What's your sense of, what's your level of optimism that we'll get through this?
I'm completely optimistic that we'll get through it. It'll be tough and challenging. You know, if we have to stay on lockdown or if the lockdowns get more severe or more restrictive, it'll be difficult, maybe even ugly and challenging. And certainly it'll be more challenging for some Kentuckians than others. And we've got to do our part to help those. But I have no doubt that we'll recover from it. All the brilliant minds here and in the rest of the world that are working on some sort of vaccine or some sort of treatment, I'm sure we'll come up with something. The controls and maybe hopefully some of the lessons we learn from this sort of outbreak and crisis and pandemic can translate into some policy changes, both in Congress and at the state level and perhaps in the regulatory world. I've seen places where states are dropping a lot of restrictions on allowing docs to or healthcare professionals to practice without going through some of the same hoops that they would otherwise have to jump through, maybe those are some things that we should lower some of those hurdles and get government out of the way to make sure we can more quickly respond the next time something like this comes up. Hopefully we'll learn a lot from it, but I have no doubt we'll come out on the other side.
Can you help put to death a silly rumor? I guess being somewhat of a public personality and having a high number of followers on social media, I attract sometimes some of the craziest rumors get sent to me. And I try to calm people down, and I'm like, you know, like the fake do you have coronavirus test? I put a post up about that. I'm like, guys, this is fake. If the CDC had inside information, it wasn't given to the public. That right there is your first clue that if the CDC is only trying to save themselves and their closest friends, you probably don't have a friend in the CDC. That's not real. Another one I've been getting recently is that Governor Beshear is about to call up the military, shut down the interstates, and close the state off and force everybody to stay at home like 24 hours a day. Can you shed any light on that? I mean, it's silly, and I'm
that
just
being discussed in a room somewhere. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah,
who knows what sort of briefings the administration's getting from the CDC or from the national level folks, from Vice President Pence's task force, or whatever source they might be getting it from. But if that's being discussed, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's silliness. In fact, I'd not heard. In fact, even New York, where they're having a huge problem with this thing right now, their governor came out yesterday and said, no, we're not doing mandatory lockdowns. People just need to take responsibility for their actions. You know, right now I'm going outside to hike and to get provisions. That's it. That's the only reason I leave the house right now is if the weather's good enough for me to get outside away from people and hike, I go do that almost daily. Other than that, man, and my provisions, I'm at home. And it's not because I feel like the government has told me to do it. It's because I feel like it's the right thing to do because I feel great. But if I have this gestated in my system and I feel great and I'm never going to be affected by it, the last thing I want to do is give it to your grandmother.
Yeah, that's my wife and I and our kids, our biggest concern, all my brothers that live nearby, we haven't gone to see my mother,
right.
Our mother. Amanda's grandmother turned 91 yesterday on Wednesday. And they didn't go see her. They're going to do a birthday party maybe in a week after they've all been clear long enough. But in the meantime, this weekend while I was at home, you know, we shot a little time-lapse video birthday message of the kids coloring in a big, huge sheet of paper, butcher paper, birthday card that's 4 foot long. And made a little quick video, and we shared that with Amanda's grandmother yesterday. So, you know, we're making do.
Yeah.
But our biggest concern is spreading it to others.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to spend some time on a positive thing that's going on in your life. You had a tweet yesterday. It was kind of funny. Somebody called you the skinny Senator Westerfield, and you have lost an enormous amount of weight. You look fantastic. You look fit. You look trim. You look happy. You look healthy. Yeah, I love stories like this. Can you shed a little bit of light on how you shed those pounds?
Yeah. Holly Harris. He used to work with then Commissioner Comer, is now active with nationally with Congress and state level legislators around the country. She tweeted out our super skinny stalwart Whitney Westerfield carrying a bill. And I said, I'll retweet anything from you, Holly, that calls me super skinny. I've gone from a high water mark of 356 pounds last February ish,
right,
to 241 pounds this past weekend.
Wow.
God has blessed me with a healthy recovery from a procedure. I had gastric sleeve surgery back in October. It all started, I've been overweight for a long time and heavy and just sort of a slow march upwards with intermittent times when I've dropped down. I got, in 2014, up here in session, I got down to about 280.
Wow.
By doing on the Atkins diet, just cutting carbs way, way, way down in my diet. It worked really well, but I just can't always stick with that.
Right.
I've tried everything. Like everybody else that's heavy, I've tried just about every diet you can try. And I've had varying levels of success. And at one point in the fall of 2018, we went to go see a surgeon down in Nashville who had operated on a member of my church in Hoptown. And she had had gastric bypass surgery and lost it. Just all of her weight. She looks great. You know, super healthy. She's a little bit older than me, but not much, and just had great success. And I was curious, hadn't really had any conversation with anybody that had the surgery. You know, you just see stories from afar and you see things online. So we went to go see the doctor. And I left that meeting thinking, not crazy about cutting my stomach or rerouting my intestines or anything like that. And we talked about non-surgical things. There were some drugs that I could have tried that I hadn't tried before. And we didn't do anything, didn't get any drugs or medicines or prescriptions. Well, then February of 19 came, and I had my little mini physical that my health insurance requires. They pricked my finger, and for the first time ever, after they got the blood work from my finger, they pulled me to this back room in the little nurse's station here at the annex. And they counseled me for 20 minutes about all the things were about to kill me. And it scared the bejesus out of me. I was on the borderline edge of having diabetes diagnosed and high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Triglycerides had been creeping up on me for a number of years, so that one wasn't a surprise. But the others scared me to death. So I told my wife, I always share my numbers with her just, you know, in case I drop dead. I want to make sure she knows what the heck went on. And we decided, well, let's go back and see the surgeon. And we did. Spent the rest of last year going through the things that the insurance required me to do, trying to lose weight. In fact, lost about 25 pounds over the course of the year, got from 356 down to 332, ultimately 332 about a week before surgery in early October, and had gastric sleeve, and it went perfectly well. And I'm down to 241 today. Blessed with a really smooth procedure. Everything went well. It's really weird to have to eat as little as I eat now.
Yeah.
I went from, y'all saw how big I was, a big dude. When the sitting governor was running against me for AG and he puts on an ad with a big fat guy in a bathrobe.
Right.
You know, everybody else sees that you're a huge guy. So I was a big dude, and it's been fun to get new clothes and new suits, not cheap.
Right.
But fun nonetheless to put on clothes that fit. And all of that is just a side benefit. The big deal was I wanted to live longer for my wife and my two kids. I got a 5-year-old girl and a 2-year-old son, and I want to be here longer than I would have been if I was pushing 360 pounds and dying of all manner of heart and sugar-related things.
So what are those numbers back to fairly normal now?
Yeah, they are. I had my little mini physical this year a couple weeks ago, and every number that needed to go down went down a lot.
That's awesome.
a couple of numbers that needed to go up went up a lot. So I am much better. The diet is much better. And it you know, the people who have had the surgery, I've been in this part of this Facebook group, and it's got thousands and thousands of people in it. And they all refer to it as a tool. The surgery is a tool. You've got to use that properly. And they're right. That's the way I view it, and they view it, and you have to view it. I could go and just eat bread and crap all day long, but right. My stomach's going to dig again. I won't get the nutrients and the proteins my
yep.
body needs.
Yep.
So you got to, you know, I've got a smaller stomach now. This is the sleeve, by the way, is where they go in with a divide. I think it all does at the same time, where they staple on two sides and cut down the middle as the tool goes up your stomach. So the size of your stomach goes from the size of a football to the size of about a medium banana.
Wow.
And the part of your stomach that's sealed up on the bigger part, they pull it out. So my stomach's just, most of my stomach was gone.
Right.
Is gone.
Right.
But that same stomach can still stretch out again. So I've got to be disciplined about not drinking a lot before or after I eat until I've waited enough time for my food to digest. I have to focus on getting protein in first because I just don't have the room to put a bunch of junk in there. I'll tell you what, though. I believe addiction to food is a real thing, but it didn't really sink into me until, oddly enough, the Friday before surgery.
Yeah.
So, look, every doctor is different. The advice is different. My doctor said be on a liquid diet for at least 48 hours before the surgery.
Right.
Some go 2 weeks before surgery, whatever. Mine said 48 hours. I added a day or so to that. I had to be in Frankfurt on the Friday before my surgery in early October. And so I'm already on this liquid diet, brought my lunch box with my drinks in it, some protein shakes and other things. No food. But for years now, my at that point, the 6.5 years I'd been in the legislature, 7 years I'd been in the legislature, I made this habit every time I left Frankfort, I'd stop at the same gas station before I got on the Bluegrass Parkway, fill up my tank, get some water or Propel Fitness water, or in the old days even, and I haven't been drinking soft drinks for a couple of years, but I used to get soft drink, Diet Mountain Dew or Diet Pepsi. I'd get a ribeye sandwich. I'd get a Little Debbie cake and then a bag of chips. I'd load up, man.
Wow.
That Friday, the urge to stop. My tank was full. I had no reason to stop there at all. The urge to stop at that gas station to get the junk that I would eat was overwhelming to me.
Wow.
It was the strongest I've ever wanted food and not get it. And it hit me hard that day. My brain is the issue here. I wanted food so much, and I'm used to eating it so much. I don't know if it's the dopamine levels or whatever, but I'm hooked on just eating that food. Even now, since October, early October to now, 5 or 6 months out, even now when I go sit down at a restaurant, my brain still wants to get all the stuff I would usually get at a restaurant.
Yeah, wow.
But I've got to be really disciplined about, you know, I'm not going to get bread, I'm not going to roll.
Yeah.
I don't get a lot. In fact, I haven't had red meat. I've had maybe a teaspoon or tablespoon of ground beef cooked in the last 6 months.
Wow. I think that's awesome that you've disciplined yourself. There's only one restaurant in the world that I eat the bread at anymore, and that's Malone's. I can't resist their herb butter that they put in the Malone's in Lexington. I can't stand it. I love it. It's amazing. But if I don't go there, I don't eat bread ever. I'm just really proud of you, man. I've known you for a long time. I think you're a great dude. You've got a great heart, and I'm glad that you saw the signs and you took the action, and you're going to be around for a lot longer for your family. And I think there's a great lesson in that a lot of people hearing this might need to hear. And, you know, maybe you don't have to go and get gastric sleeve surgery. That is, like you said, that's a very extreme, you know, an extreme way of going about it, because it was, you know, that was the thing you had to do. But others might be able to see it before it gets to that point and make some other adjustments to their own lifestyle. I think it's awesome you're willing to talk about it and share your story with others.
You know, I had, and I shared this with Cameron Mills. I sent him a text back. It was before Jared Lorenzen passed away. But I had gone to see the doctor and had decided to do that before he passed away. And then you know, he was going through his weight loss journey. And I shared with Cameron, Jared Lorenzen, he wouldn't have remembered me, but he was my next door neighbor in Kerwin 1 in our freshman year at UK. So he's a friggin' superstar, and I'm a peon in the room next door in the football player's dorm. So I met him and got to know him a little bit, but he wouldn't have remembered me.
Right.
But I felt motivated by his efforts to take care of his body and to try to get his weight under control.
Yeah.
And my hope is that his story or my story or others can motivate others just to take care of the bodies. You just get the one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Got to do better to take care of it than I was doing. I have fear on some days about blowing back up and getting big again. And it at least so far, I'm staying very disciplined about what I'm supposed to eat, how much of it I'm supposed to be eating, and I'm making the right decisions. And my hope is that I can stay around for a lot longer. I won't always be in the Senate, and I'm sure at least half your listeners will be pleased to hear that, but I'll hopefully be around a lot longer for my wife and kids.
I think that's awesome. Listen, Senator Whitney Westerfield, it's always great talking to you. Thanks for your leadership. We appreciate your time. And again, just I love you like a brother, and hang in there, and I think it's awesome, and I'm super proud for you, man.
Thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it, Lee.
All right, have a great day.
Take it easy.
That's pretty cool. What an inspiring story. Yeah, look, we're going to talk coronavirus, obviously, because it's the thing everybody's talking about. But I gotta give you some other stuff, too, from time to time. And stories like that just really lift me up. I hope they lift you up. Look, you know, there's everybody has to find their own way. For me personally, I had a health scare, you know, 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I've lost track of time now. I don't know. I don't even know what day it is with this everybody stay at home thing. I told my wife yesterday, I said, I mean, I'm getting work done, but I'm like, what day is it? I don't know if it's Wednesday, Thursday. What is it? I don't know. But anyway, several years ago, I had a pretty big health scare, and, you know, I did everything the doctors told me to do, and everything got worse. So I said, there has to be another way. They told me it was hereditary. And I said, there has to be another way. So I found marksdailyapple.com. And it was a website that was talking about this low-carb diet. And I started reading the success stories and the conditions that were healed or at least massively abated by this way of eating. And I was like, if this is real, this is it. So then I ordered the book, The Primal Blueprint, by the author Mark Sisson, who was the guy who started that website. And I read the book and it changed my life. And from that time on, my wife and I have eaten low-carb paleo, meaning all whole foods, no processed food. We cut out canola oil. We cut out what you call bad oil, soybean oil, soy. We cut out any non-organic dairy. We do still eat cheese that's organic and occasionally milk, but rarely ever drink milk. Replace that with coconut milk and heavy cream. We do the heavier organic dairies. Red meat, pork, chicken, fish, vegetables. We eat a wide variety of things. We just don't eat sugar. I still eat fruits, not certain types of fruits, but I'll eat blueberries and blackberries. I've always got blueberries and blackberries in my refrigerator. And I try to keep on a daily basis, my carbs below between 80 and 100. And then occasionally, a couple times during the year, I'll go into what would be called ketosis, which is extremely low carb, you know, 20 to 50 a day. And that kind of resets your metabolism, kind of resets your immune system. And I do that about twice a year for about 4 or 5 weeks. And then the rest of the times, try to keep it 80 to 100. And I'm telling you, I feel like I'm 20 years old. I'm in the best physical shape of my life. And I was an athlete in high school. I'm in the best physical shape of my life. I'm stronger. I'm faster. I just feel amazing. My energy level's high. It can't be beat. And I know a lot of people that have taken this path and they have achieved the same thing. And, you know, for other people, it will be a little bit different path. And it's got to be customized. But wow, I'm super proud for Senator Whitney Westerfield because he's done an amazing thing. And I love that he's sharing that with people and inspiring people about his journey and how important it was for him to live. And I think that's where I share that connection with him. For me, I said, no, I'm not going to live the rest of my life eating an old man's diet and waiting
for the inevitable heart attack or whatever. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to live. I'm going to thrive. And that's what Whitney Westerfeld chose to do, and that's what I chose to do, and that's what you can choose to do too. All right, we're going to continue to have updates on the coronavirus and much more. Big shows coming your way here. We're hoping next week to get a former FEMA director on the podcast. So I'll let you know about that shortly. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show or at Zone Disruption. On Instagram, it's at Greatly Londo or at The Disruption Zone. Our podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, especially Apple Play, Apple Podcasts and Google Play. It's free subscription. The best thing you can do to help me is to spread the word and share with your friends about this podcast. The more people we get subscribed, and it's free, like I said, and I'm going to do everything in my power to keep it free. And so the more people we can get listening to this, the more we spread our message, the more powerful our message gets, the more effect that we can have on our state and beyond. So if you could share this, that would be a great favor to me. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host, Cameron Mills, who will be back with us again later next week. And thanks to the support that we get from Dynamics Audio Productions in Lexington, Kentucky. If you're restoring old VHS tapes to some new digital format that you can actually access on your television, watch the old family videos, or you're doing a major Hollywood production or somewhere in between, Neil Kesterson at Dynamics Audio is the best audio guy I've ever known, and he can do you up right. And you can go to dxaudio.com to find out more. So, again, share us, get us out there. Thanks for listening. I am Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.